The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
In my many years of engaging in Buddhist practice, there have been a lot of surprises for me, and kind of surprise discoveries. For me, the surprise discoveries in the process. And one of the surprises that has been the most, among the more delightful ones, has been the tremendous value of mindfulness of the body, being connected to the body. So much so that one of the great things I've learned to trust is to trust my body, to trust being present to my body, mindfulness of the body. And it wasn't always that way. I think that before I started doing Buddhist practice, I was not particularly connected to my body. I wasn't particularly aware of what was happening in my body. And when I started my Buddhist practice, my meditation practice, I had no idea that the body had any importance. The body was an appendage that got in the way, that made meditation difficult, because there was those knees that ached, and the back that was uncomfortable, and this and that. And somehow I had to kind of get by that, overcome that, get around that, so I can get into the real meditation. But what I've slowly discovered is that there was no getting around it, that the body was very much a big part of the practice, to get into the body. And in fact, what happened slowly over the years was an awakening of my body and being connected, kind of the body's ability to have sensations, the body's ability to feel things, to sense things, to know what's going on. It became stronger and stronger for me. And it's still, that process is still going on, and I'm delighted to kind of continue to watch this process as my body wakes up more. There's a kind of a debate in Buddhism between when you get enlightened, what gets enlightened? And that's very common for people who are in this debate to say that it's the mind, you enlighten the mind. Zen Master Dogen and a few other people have said, no, it's the body that gets awakened. So I'm not going to side with either side of the debate. But it's interesting that there are some people who put so much value in the body, but that's the locus, that's the location of awakening, this great enlightenment thing. I read recently a wonderful description that someone had written about the process of the body becoming more sensitive, more awake, more present, more alive, more connected to awareness. And they described it like having water wicker up a piece of cloth. So you kind of have this, you know, kind of this osmotic kind of, or whatever, I mean, that's not the right word, but kind of this way in which the water kind of soaks into the cloth and kind of slowly kind of wickers up and through it and fills it. So in that way, the body slowly kind of wickers up your awareness. The awareness spreads through the body in some beautiful way. In the teachings of the Buddha, he also gave some somewhat similar, similes or analogies for the process of awakening the body or becoming more sensitive with the body as we do meditation practice. And I want to share some of them with you. One of them is kind of the initial stages of concentration practice is that of in ancient India they had, powdered soap, dry powdered soap. And you would sprinkle water into the powder, like the way you'd sprinkle water into flour to make dough. You'd sprinkle water into that soap powder to make it into a dough, to make it moist. And you would massage it so that the water spread and became even throughout the powder. So just right. So it wasn't dripping, it wasn't sopping wet, but it was none of it was dry anymore. So in the same way, as we stay with our breath, that rhythm of breathing in, breathing out, mind wanders off, we come back, slowly we settle in to being more settled and more concentrated. that slowly there develops a kind of a sensitivity and awareness and aliveness to the body, that it's kind of like you're kind of working the body, you're kind of massaging. Every time you come back with that rhythm of breathing in, breathing out, the rhythm of going away, coming back, slowly the body starts becoming more alive, more present, more here, in a very, very nice way, comfortable way. And so the Buddha, at least, likened this little bit to that of making this powder moist and holding it together. And a part of this analogy, I think, is that when we're not in our body, not connected to our body, the body's dry. And when you're connected and in your body, the body feels moist. It's kind of nice. Kind of a nice association of being kind of moist, organic, malleable. It's malleable, shapeable, soft, as opposed to being kind of dry and brittle and hard. So another analogy that the Buddha used to go a little bit further into meditation was that of a lake. A lake where it doesn't rain and where there are no rivers that flow into the lake. But there's an underground spring that brings this refreshing, cool water up from the bottom of the lake. And the water, there's a current of water that goes up from that bottom of the lake up into the lake, spreading this refreshing water. And they have these analogies in India, often cool water because it's a hot country. And in English, which was a language that was put together in a cold, wet climate, we talk about how wonderful it is to be warm, like being warm-hearted. In India, they talk about being cool-hearted. And that's wonderful for them, but you tell an English-speaking person being cool-hearted, and it's like, oh, that person's a little bit cold. But in a very hot climate, apparently in a hot climate, being cool-hearted is pretty good. So this cool, refreshing current. So in meditation, sometimes it feels like this current of energy or current of sensations, current of coolness or refreshment, kind of coursing through your body, but there's movement connected to it, warmth, a flow. We say warmth, they say coolness. It depends on where you are, I guess, where you live. And so you have this kind of feeling of flow. The body feels alive, vibrant, connected. And it's a wonderful feeling to have feeling the body alive and vibrant and connected. And then the next analogy, and it kind of these kind of follow each other in this kind of sequence. The next analogy is that of also a lake. It's interesting how much water is used as symbolic of as metaphors of this process. It's a lake that's completely still. There's no current at all, completely still. And in that lake, there grows lotus flowers. And those lotus flowers, the way lotus flowers can grow is they are rooted in the bottom of the lake and the stems come up. And some of the lotus blossoms blossom under the water and some of them will come up and blossom on top of the water, but some blossom underneath. And so here, the lake is really refreshing again. It has wonderful, cool, refreshing quality, nourishing quality. But the refreshment here, there's no current in it. It's completely still. And one of these lotus blossoms that it opens inside, underneath the water, is surrounded by this cool refreshment, this cool, refreshing, nourishing feeling, the water. And the texts say, no part of the lotus flower is not touched by that refreshment. So in that sense, we sit in kind of, we're really connected deeply in the body. There's a kind of this refreshing feeling sometimes that can happen, but there's this tremendous stillness that's there, just really still. Can hear, very still. And it feels very nourishing, that stillness. Present. And the body is not alive or vibrant, which feels kind of wonderful and great, but it's much more satisfying when that vibrancy settles down into a very, very, very peaceful, still place. And no part of the body that you're aware of does not feels untouched by that refreshment, that nourishment. And then there goes one more step, the last step of this process. And this is, a hot, dusty, place, and here someone goes, maybe very thirsty as well, and the person goes into the lake, gets really refreshed, nourished, drinks some of the water, feels satisfied that way, and then comes out of the lake and wraps herself with a soft, clean, pure, white cotton blanket, completely covered. And so maybe you can imagine maybe coming out of, so you go, before going into the lake, the person's dirty, tired, parched, and maybe wants to get some refreshment, but that's been satisfied by being in the lake. It's been completely satisfied by drinking. And so the person comes out of the lake satisfied. What had to be done is kind of done, settled. And now the person's ready to sit at the edge of the lake underneath a tree in the shade. It was a very deep, satisfying feeling, and nowhere to go, nothing to do, nothing to be for anybody, except just to be present, content, satisfied. And the kind of feeling kind of cozy, collected, here. With a kind of way you feel like, maybe if you remember, some of you as a kid made little tents under your table or something. It felt kind of nice and cozy inside the tent, or just this cool, nice, fresh blanket around you. And so here, and no part of the body is not touched by this blanket or the sheet. So in that same way. So the Buddha is trying, through these analogies, to try to describe experiences of meditation and what it feels like, partly physically, in the body. Because for the Buddha, the connection to your body is such a huge part of this practice. Now, I think many people think of meditation as being of the mind. And sometimes there's a big split between the mind and the body. Some people say that in Western culture, parts of Western culture have kind of reinforced this big split between the mind and the body. In Buddhism, that strong split does not exist. And so the cultivation of the mind in Buddhism, like through meditation, cultivates the body. You cultivate the body, it cultivates the mind. The two, there's such a strong mutual relationship there. And one of the ways we can see that is with how much our muscles react, respond, are activated by our emotions, by our motivations, by our feelings, by our reactions to what's going on. And we have these muscles that they're designed to do all this work for us, to flight or fight, as you know, expression. And so the muscles gear up to fight, they gear up to flight, they gear up to do whatever they need to be engaged in doing. It takes effort and energy to live this life. And so we have this wonderful system, the bodily system, that's very adaptive. And so the breathing changes depending on what's going on. And when we need to run, need to defend ourselves, we breathe in different kinds of ways, and if we're relaxed, to have the energy and the ability to kind of dash and run off. The mountain lion's about to jump, and we know that's probably, maybe, instinctively, it's best to kind of hunch down, protect yourself. And so, you know, when there's fear, we kind of tighten up the shoulders and hunch down. It's a variety of things the body does that's good adaptive way of being, maybe in the wild. But what's been said here in our modern culture, a lot of the ways in which the body has been adapted to deal with fear, deal with activity in the world, becomes chronically locked into place into the body by the kind of chronic emotions that or feelings or reactions that people live under in urban culture and society. It doesn't have to be urban, I guess, but modern society. So there's plenty of people who feel fear without the mountain lion about the jump. There's no mountain lion within a few miles of here. So most of us are not afraid of that. But we're maybe really afraid of being rejected by people, or not being liked, or being abandoned. Or we're really afraid of losing our job, or not performing well. Or there's a lot of things. Or losing someone we love. There's all kinds of things that people carry with them that are kind of chronic attitudes. And these chronic attitudes get lodged in the body. Strong experiences that we have, like very strong emotional experiences that have strong physical reactions, sometimes they take a lot, it takes a lot of effort to get these the body to relax afterwards. That's why some people like to go to get massaged. And deep when there's really deep trauma, and there can be tension holding patterns that are locked in the body that can last for 30, 40, 50, 60, a whole lifetime, based on something very powerful that might have happened when you were a kid. I was going to maybe tell you some of these stories that I know of people, but they're so gruesome that I'll spare you. But, you know, terrible things happen to people, and then they get these things get lodged deeply in their psyche and their body. And so these chronic holding patterns. Or some of you, I think, probably spend a fair amount of time in front of the computer monitor. And so there's not a psychological holding, but there's a kind of work holding, intense. And I see in myself that when I spend a lot of time in the computer, sometimes I get tight in my arms a little bit, kind of holding and engaged. And I'm mentally, I'm kind of, content and relaxed. I'm not afraid of anything. But I'm really intent on getting this work done. And that intentness, I can feel sometimes goes into my shoulders, into my arms, into my back, and sometimes in my face even. And so sometimes after it's kind of built up there, I can't just say, okay, relax, Gil, just let go. It takes a while for some of this to kind of unwind. And this is one of the things I find so helpful about meditation practice, is meditation practice is a chance for me to unwind some of the tension that's built up in the course of a day or a course of an hour or a course of different activities. And I'm so grateful that I've had this practice to allow this unwinding. And really, when I imagine what my life would be like and what my body would be like if I hadn't been meditating, I think it probably wouldn't have been a good picture. Because I get this kind of, every day I get this deep body work, is what it feels like. And it feels really good for my body to have it happen. Healing, beneficial. Abraham Lincoln is supposed to have said, by the time a person is 40, they're responsible for their face. and I don't know what he meant, except that what I imagine is that the attitudes that we carry with us, the holdings that we hold ourselves, affects, our musculature. And in fact, sometimes if you see, I've seen people who've had seemingly the same genetic, ethnic background, who grew up in different cultures, like different countries. And their parents moved from one country to the other. And so they were ethnically of the parents' situation, but they grew up in a whole different culture than their parents. And if you compare people like that, sometimes, it seems to me at least, that there's something different in their face depending on the country they grew up in, that is not attributed to the culture, not to their ethnicity, not to their genes or whatever. It can make some sense because different languages require different muscles in your face. And when you speak a language, you don't just speak words, you speak expressions as well. And so you learn the expressions. And I remember when I went in Brazil, I wasn't there for probably more than a few hours in Brazil before I started using a hand gesture that everyone was using. It was like, this is the way. Or when I lived in Italy, there was a different hand gesture. It was this one here. It's like you can't really get by in Italian without going like this with your hand. Cosa vuoi? Cosa vuoi? And so these muscles, and the wrists get together. That's kind of silly, I guess, example. But the idea that being, the attitudes, so much gets held in our body. And so meditation practice is a time to stop. And in that stopping, have a chance for ourselves, for our body to catch up to us, for us to notice what's going on. If we keep going and not paying attention, then it's many people are ahead of themselves into the next wanting, into the next planning, or they're still behind themselves, but they're not here where their body is. And so they can't check in to the body, find out what's going on here. And if you're not really here for your body as it is, checking in with it, the body doesn't have this good opportunities to unwind. Now, it's possible, if you sit and watch television and get distracted, your body will relax to some degree. it's been my experience that the deepest way of really unwinding requires a lot of presence. You can, to some degree, you can unwind by being distracted, but if you want to unwind really, really deeply, you have to be really present. You have to be here, because there's something about being present that for what's here that allows what's here to unwind or to dissolve, unfold, move in the direction it needs to go. It's like making room. I think of mindfulness practice, paying attention, as making room for our experience. And when there's room, then it can spread out, it can unfold. Kind of like if you hold a spring that's wound up tightly in a small space, it'll stay wound up. You open the space up, and the spring can unwind. So whatever our experience is, if we're claustrophobic in our mind, if we're riding things really closely, preoccupied, obsessed by things, then it's hard for things to unwind. But if we bring a careful, non-reactive attention, noticing what's here, it's like makes room and allows things to unwind. And I was pretty surprised at some point when I started my early years of meditation to realize that I was more relaxed after my morning meditation than I was when I woke up from sleep. That was a surprise for me. I thought, sleep, that's pretty relaxing, pretty good. And normally, I'd relax and feel good after sleeping and then start my day without feeling refreshed. But then when I started meditating first thing in the morning, I thought, wow, I can get even more relaxed than I was through sleep. Isn't that neat? I think it's pretty neat. So there's a big emphasis in Buddhism of being connected to your body, being present here. However, we don't want to be in a hurry now to celebrate the body. Great, these Buddhists, they love the body, they're into it. The awareness of your body is not always good news. Because of this holding stuff in the body, sometimes there's a lot of tension, a lot of strong feelings and pain in the body. And part of this process, a very mature process, maturing process, is to allow ourselves to feel the discomfort when it's there. The pain, the tension, the holding, the fear, the emotions that are there. And not to run away from it, not to be in a hurry to fix it, but make room for it so it has a chance to unfold the way it needs to unfold. The beginning of this talk, I said that I've learned to trust my body, which means that when I feel something in my body, the unfolding, the unwinding of that is not according to my agenda. It's not according to how I think it needs to unfold, but rather it's a feeling, okay, I'm going to be present here for this body and what's going on, my feelings, the sensations in my body, and then I'm going to give it time to show itself so I can learn from it, and so I could let it unwind and do what it needs to do. There are some discomforts in the body which are physical, or has to do with illness. And I've known people who really relied on very careful mindfulness of it in order to negotiate their injury or their thing so they can minimize how much pain they have, or minimize the impact it has on them. The mindfulness has been really helpful. They learn to kind of make subtle adjustments how they walk so that, it doesn't... And in fact, some of you probably had the experience of enforced mindfulness. Your back has gone out, and if you weren't mindful, watch out. And I loved it once. My back went out. It was completely out. Boy, was it out. And what I loved about it, a lot of it I didn't like. But what I really liked was this enforced mindfulness. I was more present, walking around with that bad back than I was much of my daily life otherwise, because it was so consequential, every little twitch. So, mindfulness of the body can be helpful that way. But also, even with physical pain that has been like an injury, there's often layers of holding around the pain that sometimes adds to it. I learned that I would have knee pain in meditation sometimes. And I learned to identify that when I had aversion to the knee pain, the muscles around my knee would tighten up. And when they tightened up, I felt more pain. When I didn't have the aversion, I let go of the aversion, the extra tightness would relax, and then I'd feel less pain. It's almost like the reactivity sometimes to discomfort in the body can make it worse. Now, some of the when the muscles are chronically tight, chronically held, it seems that sometimes they go numb. And part of the process of waking up through meditation or through any other ways, waking up the body, these places that are numb have to become sensitized, become aware again, become alive, or become, you know, have sensation there again. And the process of going from numbness to sensation is often not a pleasant process. In order to, because there's a chronic holding there that can feel actually quite painful as they wake up. And I've known people who've said, oh, my meditation's going backwards. I was so relaxed before, and now I'm so tense and tight, and it hurts my shoulders and this and that. And they think something's wrong with them. But in fact, they're making progress. The progress requires them to open up, to wake up the places that are numb, and then be patient while they stay present for the pain, for the discomfort. And the presence of certain kinds of pain is not a sign of some problem in meditation. It's a problem of the cure happening, of being to unfold and relax. So slowly, often, especially for beginners in meditation, there will be a process of working with discomfort. And that takes patience. It hopefully comes with a certain understanding that it's valuable to do this and how it's valuable to do it, so you don't feel it's a drag or feel like you're a failure or feel discouraged. But with time, as you get more relaxed, more present, and more here, with time, the body starts feeling more delightful. And this process of the water and being in the lake and all that, and the kind of sense of well-being sets going. Now, the more relaxed the person can be in their body, when they, let's say through meditation, and also their mind more relaxed, I don't think it's reasonable to expect to be able to maintain that relaxed state as we leave meditation and go into our daily life. However, one of the great values of the relaxed state we have, whatever relaxed, even just a very teeny bit of relaxation, is we have a reference point that we didn't have before, the reference point of that relaxed state. And that reference point helps show us when we start tightening up, when we start picking things up, reacting to things. So if a person's always chronically tight and held and whatever, and then there's something, the mountain lion jumps out of the woods at them, there's no movement to tighten up anymore. And so they don't see that they're even more afraid, maybe, because the muscles don't show it. But if you're really relaxed, and then something frightening happens, you'll notice very quickly how much you tense up. You have tensible capacity. Does that make some sense, what I'm trying to say? So because you have that tensible capacity, the greater your tensible capacity, that's a new idea, your capacity for tension, the more that becomes a reference point to see your reaction and response. And so then you can learn from that. You can study that. So a really good thing to do is to be as relaxed as you can be in the easy way. And then notice when you start tensing, whether it's your belly or your shoulders or your jaws or your face or your eyes or your brain or anywhere you might feel it. But don't just feel it. If you can, stop and look at that. What was that about? What happened just now? Why am I tense in my body? Why am I holding on somehow? What are the emotions? What are the beliefs inherent here in place? So it could be as simple as walking down the street and some person who you've never seen before walks down the other direction, passes you, and as the person comes closer to you, you feel your stomach getting tight. So you could just recognize that and cross the street to avoid the person. Or you could say, wait, this is interesting information. This tension is telling me something. What's going on here? So you look more carefully and you see the feeling of the person. Maybe the person reminds you of your evil fourth grade teacher. So, oh, that's why I feel that way. And you have a seeing, oh, but that's not the teacher, so I can relax. maybe that was a silly example, but I'm trying to give you an example of how you can use this to find out what's going on. So I do this a lot. I tune into my body, and I do it when I give Dharma talks here, because what I do with my body, what happens with me, tells me something about how I am relating to the talk and to you. And I've learned, for example, that if I start leaning forward, there's a certain tension that goes up my back as I lean forward and get tight. Sometimes, I have to be careful, notice that when I'm giving talks, because sometimes that happens when I'm worried that I'm not getting across what I want to get across. Worried I'm losing the audience, losing you. So I got to make extra effort. So that's interesting to notice that. If I'm always tense, I don't have that information. But if I'm relaxed to begin with, then I can notice that movement. So that's helpful. So I trust my body, and one of the practices I have is to yield to my body. Interesting concept, yielding to the body. So I feel what's going on in my body, and then I try to relax into it, or I try to open into it, or open that part of my body. Can I have my body more open to what's happening here? And what that allows me to do is to feel more fully what's happening, both inside of me and outside of me, but also make space for me to feel the emotions, the tensions and stuff that's going on. I can be more open. And it's not always so easy, because if I try to stay open, then sometimes I feel more vulnerable. Or sometimes I feel more uncertain, or I feel, you know, I might feel, like say that I'm impatient. And so I feel that impatience is a certain kind of tightness somewhere. And then if I open to that impatience, relax with impatience, it's like I have this, it's a kind of awkward situation where there's this momentum, this motivation to do something, to act with the impatience, to be faster or something. And this openness at the same time. And I find it kind of very, sometimes it's kind of uncomfortable to hang out in those two, that kind of in-between place. But I find it very healing, because it allows the body to do some kind of process of relaxing, of unfolding, of moving, of revealing, that wouldn't happen if I gave in to the impatience and started acting and doing a lot of things fast. Or if I feel irritated, or feel a little bit nervous about something, or, you know, to open, relax and open to the body, kind of, in a sense, metaphorically, kind of settle back. Okay, here I am, and this is what's happening. Let's settle back and feel this right now. Let's feel what's happening here, as opposed to, let's get something done. Or let's prove to the other person I'm talking to that I'm right. Or let's defend myself, or let's do this and that. I don't think people necessarily see that I'm doing this. But in my own self, I'm trying to imagine, I'm kind of feeling like, let's settle back and feel this. And that settle back and feeling is a mindfulness of the body experience. And then sometimes I feel kind of tentative in that space. And I find it very helpful to be tentative sometimes, to be vulnerable, feel vulnerable. There's so much more learning, discovery about myself in that place. So yielding. Let's yield to this here and now. Let's relax into it. Let's open to it here. I find it really, really a great thing. And finally, I'd like to say about the mindfulness of the body. the body never lies. The mind... none of you ever lie. But the mind is tricky. And many spiritual teachers and people sometimes treat part of the mind as being almost like a, like not you. It's like this, the mind has a mind of its own. And the mind is, can be, do all kinds of, has capacity for delusion, for fooling ourselves, for lying to ourselves, putting on blinders, denial, repression, all these wonderful Freudian things. And but the body doesn't do that. The body is never lies. It's there. And so not only is that, so you can connect to what's happening and what's really true and notice what's happening in a very direct and honest way if you're with your body. Oh, I feel like I want to pull back into a shell and feel that in the body sometimes. Or you feel a certain tension, or you feel a certain kind of something in your body going on. And this process of the body never lying, the body is also a lot simpler than the mind. Our minds are so sophisticated, intelligent, adult, knowledgeable, all these different things, or confused or whatever. And they're both. And some people can get involved in an endless maze of analysis. And it's amazing to me how many times we, do I dare say we, can repeat the same thoughts, the same analysis, same conversation, over and over and over again in the head. We're constantly going back and thinking about it as if thinking is going to help us find the way, analyzing the past, planning the future. The body doesn't analyze the past. The body doesn't plan the future. The body is here. And the body, the process of the body unfolding, unraveling, relaxing, unwinding, has a direct correlation to the unwinding, the unraveling, the settling of what goes on in the mind. But it's sometimes much more direct than it is to go through the mind. So say that something difficult happened today to me, and so I'm tense. And I don't want to be tense. So you go, what happened there? I was on the freeway, this person got in front of me, and then this other person, I'd slow down, and this person in the car next to me said something, it distracted me, and then this happened, and I should have done this and that, and if only or maybe I should go back and say this to someone, or I'm just making something silly up. And in the meantime, I stay tense, trying to remember the situation. Or I just notice my shoulders are tense and relax them. That was easy. It's not always that easy, but the body is a much simpler way of sometimes accomplishing the same thing. And the body is so much the case. The body is a direct way that I like to say that it's the body which is the royal road to the unconscious. You know, the idea of the dreams are royal road to the unconscious? I think the body is. The body will take you much more directly, much faster, this inner process of discovery. So mindfulness of the body. Yielding to the body. Letting the body be your teacher. Learning from your body. Your body is always in the present moment. And your mind is occasionally in the present moment. And the task of mindfulness is to make it be so that your mind and your body are in the same place at the same time. And since you can't take your body into the future or into those other places where your mind is, you could, the task here and now is to bring your mind where your body is. So we bring our mind, our awareness, our consciousness back into this body over and over and over again and try to stay there and rest there to keep the body, keep the mind with the body. And when the mind and the body are in the same place at the same time, then there's a very profound healing that can happen between those two. And the two support each other, benefit each other, and awaken each other. That was my little encouragement, hopefully encouragement, for you to take an interest in your body now And maybe for this next week, maybe you can take some extra attention to explore your body, get to know your body, find out what's happening with your body in all kinds of situations throughout the day, not just in meditation. And try this practice of yielding to the body, settling back and feeling what's there, giving it permission to be there, and see what happens if you make space for it instead of trying to make something happen. Okay? So many, many thanks.